Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
So when I woke up this morning, I opened my fridge and it's just broken.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I don't
know. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's really bad. I'm like just listing the contents of my fridge, the now dead contents of my fridge.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, everybody. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is what we do. Thanks for downloading the pod.
Yeah, I'm Marielle Segarra in for Molly Wood. It's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, which means it's the day in the week when we get to answer the questions you send in.
And we had a veritable boatload of questions about our episode from Tuesday on decentralized finance, right? Basically a way to do finance sometimes using blockchain, sometimes not, but without intermediaries like banks. It's supposed to be faster, maybe cheaper when you cut out that middleman, but there is less regulation, thus more risk. So we're going to do a bunch of questions about that for the next 15 minutes of our lives. So here we go. First follow-up question comes from Kenneth in Wisconsin. Here's what he writes. Your guest mentioned that $93 billion in transactions occurs annually. Can you provide some examples of what those transactions might be? Please make me smart. Well, Kenneth, so here we go. When we talk about decentralized finance, right, we're talking about getting away from a bank. Okay, there are people who are doing those transactions using decentralized finance and trying to get away from a bank. There are also DeFi versions of bank accounts, networks where you can deposit money, earn interest, they make loans, there's trading, there's a bunch of stuff. But it's all super, super new, right? And I'm going to say this again, this is largely unregulated, whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's take your pick, it's all the transactions you can conceivably think of that use the banking system, but moving away from banking, right? So I would say we are still very much in the caveat emptor phase of decentralized finance. I don't know. That's my take.
Yeah, what I was trying to wrap my head around was just like, so there's really no intermediary here. It would just be through a Ethereum or what is Ethereum? Is it a network, a platform? Like, what's the right word for it?
So Ether is the actual cryptocurrency attached to Ethereum, which is the underlying technology. And if Ether actually and Ethereum let you do a whole bunch of stuff that Bitcoin doesn't, but that's a whole different kind of episode. Things like smart contracts and all of those kinds of things. But that's how. Let me see if I can make sense of this. There are cryptocurrencies. And then there are the underlying technologies like Ethereum, like the blockchain, and like those sorts of things. And that's where the promise lies, right? For the instantaneous transfer of money. If you go to the five and dime and you pay, 14/1000ths of a Bitcoin for a candy bar, that is transferred instantaneously through the blockchain from you to the vendor, okay? It's not like banking, where it has to go through if you're writing a check, it goes through the Federal Reserve. Believe it or not, the Federal Reserve is the check writing clearinghouse in this economy. It's instantaneous. And that's the promise, right? The disintermediation is the promise. The challenge, of course, is that we haven't yet figured out the systems. We haven't yet figured out the infrastructure.
Gotcha.
So there you go. That's that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's our next question, which comes to us through the Make Me Smart hotline.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Reed from Seattle. Am I missing something about traditional money transfers? If you pay me through Venmo, that money is instantly available for me to spend. There may be some delay in the background, but as a practical matter, that money is mine seconds after it is paid to me. Thanks for making us smart.
Yeah, so one of the selling points, right.
Such a good question.
I guess, right, I would say that decentralized finance is supposed to be fast or faster, but than banks. But yeah, specifically about Venmo is not an example of decentralized finance because if you're using a Venmo account, you have to connect it to a bank account or a debit card. So there is a financial middleman to actually make that transfer. And if you have access to Venmo or PayPal or a service like that, you might get your money pretty quickly, but you also might not, because the service can hold on to your money for a few weeks if they see the transaction as like risky. There are certain words that they can, if they see it in your description of the transaction, they might flag it. Maybe it's an illegal thing. So they act as a backstop to that. And also, if you want to transfer your money into your bank account from Venmo, that can take a couple days as well. But there are plenty of people who don't think of the banking tools we currently have as necessarily fast either. So here's Gil Luria, a technology strategist at DA Davidson.
The consumer finance tools available to U.S. consumers are not a universal experience. While two people in the U.S. can easily and cheaply move digital money back and forth, that is not true if you try to send money to a relative in, say, the Philippines or Nigeria, not to mention a digital transfer between two people in those countries.
So speed is one thing.
Let's be clear here, right? Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You keep going. You're on a roll.
Yeah, speed is one thing that about banking tools that doesn't work for everything, for everyone, that is. And another issue I think that people think decentralized finance could help solve is just the cost of sending money, for instance, abroad, because there are often fees tacked onto that. And some say that in decentralized finance that you could go without those fees.
Yeah, here's the other thing, and I just want to pick up on something that Gil mentioned, right? This idea of digital money, right? Digital currency. Digital money is not decentralized finance, okay? Because, number one, central banks are getting into digital currencies. We've talked about it before on the podcast. The Federal Reserve is, the central bank in China is, right? And they will definitely not be decentralized. They will not be getting themselves out of that equation. But just because you can do it digitally doesn't mean it's decentralized finance. Venmo is not decentralized finance. You got to go through a bank, even though it's digital. And that's a key thing to wrapping your brain around this. So There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's easier, but it's not decentralized. Anyway, speaking of making it easier to move money from point A to point B, it is a great segue to this question about money laundering.
Oh, this my is goodness. Lori from Bridget Tampa, Bonner, Florida. I listened to your episode on decentralized finance. While I can't argue that banks have lots of issues and prevent a chunk of the population from having accounts, they do perform an anti-money laundering function, trying to keep money away from the terrorists, human traffickers, and other bad guys. How would AML screening be done if more widespread decentralized financing? Thanks for making me smart.
Yeah, that's a great, great question, right? Because the rap on Bitcoin and crypto writ large, which is sort of the vanguard of decentralized finance, is that really what are you going to use this for except maybe to evade taxes and blackmail and ransomware and money laundering, right? And in point of fact, we know that. The feds know it too. The Treasury Department pointed out that a lot of the recent ransomware attacks have been asking for payment in Bitcoin. There is sanctions-related guidance for the crypto industry from Treasury. I will also say that Gary Gensler, the head of the SEC, is very crypto-savvy, and while money laundering is not in the Securities and Exchange Commission's bailiwick, they definitely know, Gensler does for sure, how to use that stuff. And so he's going to be keeping an eye on that one. There is guidance coming out tomorrow from the Financial Action Task Force on Money Laundering. It's a global organization devoted to fighting money laundering, about how countries in the private sector can be in compliance with their standards. So, yeah, that's a great, great question. And it is one of the many issues with crypto and DeFi that I think people, which is to say the rest of us, need to wrap our brains around it for sure. Totally.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, anytime there's something new, like a new way of approaching something we've been doing forever, it can sound super promising, but raises all these other issues, like potentially money laundering or illegal activity. But then also, what effect does it have on climate change, right? Like, so we have a voice memo from a listener who probably heard yesterday's deep dive on the carbon tax.
This is Eva from Birmingham, Michigan. During the DeFi interview, it was mentioned that a DeFi system would be run on blockchain. Does that mean that it would have a large carbon footprint like Bitcoin? Thanks for making us smarter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's another great question. Yes, lots of good questions today.
Yeah, and the answer is yes. Decentralized finance does run on cryptocurrency like Bitcoin, and it would have a large carbon footprint. according to it was Political actually that quoted this. According to research by the University of Cambridge, Bitcoin mining across the world now consumes more electricity than is used in a country the size of Austria or Portugal. And you can imagine it's just going to grow. So that's definitely something to pay attention to. And regulators in Europe are talking about this, figuring out a policy and thinking about how, if this grows, that fits into their goals to reduce carbon emissions. It's one of those things, like, it seems like climate change now overlaps with every part of the economy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just something that, yeah, like, every you know, economic agency and federal agency has to actually be worried about climate change, and every company.
Yeah. And if I could channel my inner Molly Wood here, who's off today and through the rest of the week, there's a podcast on climate change. It's called How We Survive. The Molly's, I think she's in the middle of producing. I don't even know if she's like off doing that today or whatever she's doing, but runs through December, and it's available on the podcast app of your choice. So there you go.
Yeah, it's great. You guys should listen to it.
There you go. We got the plug-in. Yeah, you totally should. We got the plug-in, and we're going to get out of here in like 12 minutes if I can get this ball out of my dog's mouth because she wants to play catch. Anyway, we're done. back tomorrow for a Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. Keep sending us your questions, your Make Me Smiles, Make Me Smart at marketplace.org, or you can leave us a voicemail, 508-827-6278, 508-UB. Sorry, that's Willow. You be smart.
She's always pushing that tennis ball at you.
She is always. She. It's,
I think. Are you not giving her enough attention? I'm a little.
She gets this dog gets so much love. Give me cut it out. Give me. You're as bad as my daughter. She's like, Dad, you got to walk the dogs again. I'm like, no, sweetie, I walked them 3 miles today. I really don't.
All right. Well, if you haven't subscribed to this podcast, I do not know what you're waiting for, but we would really appreciate it if you did.
We definitely would. We definitely would. It'd make your life easier, too. You wouldn't have to track it down. It would just show up in your phone.
Right? Boom. Today's episode of Make Me Smart was produced by Mark K. Green and engineered by Liana Spallacci. Our intern is Grace Rubin.
Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez, even though they don't work here anymore, get their name in our credits every single day for composing our theme music. Yes. Must be contractual. I don't even know. Our senior producer is Bridget Bonner, whose idea it was, by the way, to do this single-themed What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, which, honestly, I think it worked, Bridget. Nice job. Good job. Oh, and now Bridget Bonner's in the Slack. She's typing. So direct any complaints to me. Mm-hmm. That's right. There we go.
I got to go get a new fridge.
You totally do.
Might as well get a hot plate too, right?
Oh, God. Oh, man. Yeah.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.